Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, you guys are stuck with me all the way through Christmas here. Aaron Flint, great to be with you on this Monday before Christmas. I've burned up too many vacation days already this year, so you're stuck with me for the next few days here. But actually, it's a great opportunity to kind of do a 2025 year in review and then also look ahead to 2026. And great to have Montana's Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear out of Savage, Montana, now with us on the show to do that very thing and also to hone in on some very important judicial topics as well. Speaker Lear, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely, Aaron. Thank you for having me.
Whether it's a 2025 rear view mirror looking back at 2025 or looking ahead to 2026, I guess, where do you see things sitting here as we wrap up 2025?
Well, I guess looking forward to 2026, I think we got a lot of work to do in the state of Montana. And I think one of the biggest areas we got to work on is judicial reform still. We worked on it in 2025 in the session. And I think going forward, whether that's, you know, really getting behind our candidate for Supreme Court, whether that's, you know, hopefully that's Dan Wilson, and we can push him across the finish line. And we've got some court cases or some judge rulings that have just come down here in the last couple weeks that really put a spotlight on why we need judicial reform in the state of Montana.
Yeah, it's crazy to see how far left these courts are going here in Montana. Some of these state district court judges, and then, of course, you know, even though we have a new good chief justice on the Montana Supreme Court, you've still got a far left mob in control of the Montana Supreme Court when it comes to decisions on these court cases. And they are going crazy. I mean, the federal courts are finally starting to make some good decisions, but now our state courts are out of control.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got I've got a couple, three examples here of, you know, we got special needs educational savings accounts. Judge Manahan out of Helena, you know, said it was okay that they stay for the rest of this school year, but after that, they're going to be taken away. I mean, that to me was seemed like a pretty bipartisan agreement there, the bill that was ran. And, you know, for him to just say, oh, no, you know, nobody can have educational savings accounts, not even kids with special needs. And that's something these parents were, you know, really looking forward to and able to work with. And, you know, education is expensive, and to for allowing these parents and these groups to have these savings accounts for special needs kids was a big step forward in Montana, and I think you know, it was disappointing, and that was House Bill 393.
Yeah, that one was crazy. I saw that in the news. We didn't get a chance to talk about it too much yet here, but it's like, wow, they will even use kids with disabilities as hostages. They are so anti-school choice that they will go against kids with disabilities. It's insane. Hold that thought. Back with Speaker Lear.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Judicial reform, judicial elections, these are going to be the two of the major issues heading into 2026 when it comes to Montana elections and policy debates. There's even some proposed ballot initiatives where you've got out-of-state dark money operatives once again trying to cement their place in our judicial elections. So much to talk about here as we wrap up the year with Speaker of the House Brandon Lear out of Savage. We're taking your phone calls as well. If you want to jump in on the conversation, give us a call at 406-294-0970. Speaker Lear, yeah, you highlighted, you know, one bill here where, you know, you've got a judge striking down bipartisan legislation that would have, you know, supported kids with disabilities with educational savings accounts. And nope, judge doesn't like it. Judge is going to strike it down because the public employee unions are against it. There was an go ahead if you had more to share.
No, and you're 100% correct. And I mean, one thing that I think that your listeners and just citizens of Montana need to realize and understand is that these judges, you know, a judge is put into place to judge the constitutionality of a law, not to judge the policy of a law. That's our job as legislators. We're the policy. We're the people that judge and vote on policy, and they're there to judge the constitutionality of it. And when they start getting into the policy, when things go awry, and we've seen that over and over and over again in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, the judge is just not contemplating constitutionality, just completely going off of policy. And there again, like I said, they're legislating from the bench, and that's my job.
Well, and another egregious example of legislating from the bench, this left-wing judge in Missoula, he's the LGBTQ judge who, now look, his personal lifestyle is his personal lifestyle. I'm not judging him because of his personal lifestyle, but he is pushing his own personal agenda from the bench here. So this LGBTQ judge now just ruled about Montana driver's licenses. Like, he wants there to be like these different gender, transgender type of markers to be allowed on a driver's license. Like, just like disregard common sense, disregard legal reasons for why you should have male versus female on a driver's license. He just said, nope, I don't like it. He personally wants to push the LGBTQ agenda. So he ruled against sex markers on Montana driver's licenses.
Absolutely. And this is just another example of the courts making statewide policy calls that belong to the legislature. And if judges are going to start making these policy calls, I think that the voters of the state of Montana deserve transparency on what these, you know, judges' political beliefs are, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just, it's egregious. You know, this isn't a constitutional or unconstitutional decision here. This is just based on his policy views, his political leanings, not constitutionality. Absolutely.
And I think this is the same judge who was so biased in another case that he was forced to actually step down, and the case ended up seeing a change of venue because that judge is so biased when it comes to these LGBTQ issues.
That is 100% correct. He was. I don't remember the bill, but I know it had to do with, I believe it was the bathroom bill. Yep.
I think so. Yeah, where they wanted to, he wanted to allow men into women's bathrooms. And it's like, okay, dude, I get it. You like men, but you can also like to protect women's privacy rights too. You know what I'm saying? It was just like so egregious. Here you have a man saying, well, that man's privacy rights are more important than that woman's privacy rights. It was crazy.
Yep. Yeah, it was nuts. And like I said, I mean, I think that's why voters deserve full transparency on who they're electing in these roles. And you know, we need to have judges. If the judges are going to start working in the policy realm, then they got to start getting elected just like any other legislator, senator, you know, governor, anybody like that. But people want to know. People want to know where you stand and how you're gonna judge and how you're gonna rule on these cases. So it's something that needs to be really looked into. And you pointed it out earlier. There's two ballot initiatives. They're kind of near each other. And they, you know, they're trying to enshrine in the Constitution that the judicial branch stay nonpartisan. And I think that this is, you know, I want the citizens of Montana to have as much control and power over the Constitution and over the legislature and every process as they should. But with all the dark money coming in from out of state and out of country trying to sway, you know, these constitutional initiatives one way or the other, you know, that's not right. And I think that everybody needs to educate themselves on what they're voting for, especially when it comes to these ballot initiatives, because that could have, you know, really harmful effects on, I mean, our ability to work on stuff in the legislature for the betterment of Montana. And it could set us back, you know, a long way. And it would really enshrine the liberal stronghold over the judicial branch that they already have for many years to come, and there isn't anything we could do about it.
Yeah, I think the common theme, the common pattern that we're seeing here is they're trying to undermine and subvert the will of the people and how Montanans want their state to be run and the policies that Montanans want to see on the books. So they can't win the legislature. They can't, the majority. They can't win, you know, any statewide offices at all, frankly, right now, and unless they can somehow, you know, lie about being nonpartisan in a judicial race. So instead, they're trying to push their agenda through ballot initiatives, through very sneakily crafted, you know, ballot initiatives to subvert the will of the people that way. And they're using dark money and out-of-state and sometimes foreign financiers to fund all of this stuff. All right, lots to talk about here with Montana Speaker of the House, Brandon Lehr. We already got to take another quick break. Good opportunity for you to call in right now, 406-294-0970. And we're going to talk HELD 2.0 and more right after this.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know, I thought maybe we'd take a step back here for a second and look big picture to it. What's going on, not just here in Montana, what's going on in the country, but also think about it worldwide. Global. What do they always say about climate change? It's global climate change. What have we talked about here in the last 2 weeks? Remember the glaciers in Glacier National Park? The glaciers are melting. The glaciers are melting. The glaciers are going to be gone by 2020. And then they realized the glaciers were not going to be gone by 2020. And they said the glaciers were going to be gone by 2020 because of climate change. But then they quietly took down the signs because the glaciers were not gone by 2020. Now, the expert at the U.S. Geological Survey says the glaciers may be there another 75 years until the end of the century. And yet, look at how they use climate change to undermine every aspect of our economy. But Speaker Brandon Lehr, what's very interesting is the rest of the country, even the climate alarmists themselves, like Bill Gates and some of these others. I just saw a headline out of New York Governor Kathy Hochul is now the Democrat governor, now backtracking on the green agenda in New York. The fact is they are all moving away from the climate alarmist agenda because big tech and all these other guys are so desperate for energy and desperate for power that now all of a sudden they're not really funding and pushing the climate alarmist agenda so much anymore. I say all that to say, but yet here in Montana, we have these far-left judges and these far-left activists that are still trying to undermine Montana with the climate alarmist agenda, and they're using the courts to do it.
Well, and I can tell you that from personal experience, knowing some of the Senate and House leadership in Idaho, Micron, one of the biggest microchip manufacturers in the world, is investing something like $15 billion into Idaho. Now, Micron's owned by Simplot, which is an Idaho-based company, but they were going to put a plant in Idaho and then also a plant in New York. Well, the New York one, within like, I think it was 8 months, was scrapped because of all the environmental and climate review and everything that they had to do. It was costing too much money, too much time. It was going to be too much of a headache. So they completely scrapped that plant in New York, which I don't remember how many billions of dollars that was, and just decided to move everything to Idaho because Idaho is open for business. And so that tees up right into HELD 2.0. The first HELD decision come out, you know, a couple months before the legislature started up. And what it did is it kind of tasked the legislature with, hey, you know, you guys need to do what you see fit on NEPA and greenhouse gas, how to measure greenhouse gas. And so we did that. I carried House Bill 285, which is just a NEPA reform bill, saying NEPA was procedural only. It doesn't carry the weight of law. We still want to do the review, but we're not going to carry this. This form is not going to carry the weight of law. This is just a chance for the public to participate, for elected officials to understand, you know, what effects it was going to have, and then for us, let us to make the decision. And then we had House Bill 291, which is carried by Representative Oblander, which limits state agencies to, you can't have any more stringent laws or rules in place in the state, anything more stringent than the feds. And so we just kind of mirror what NEPA is, which is the national version of NEPA.
And then they're also going after Senate Bill 211, which is carried by Senator Galt, which kind of laid out the groundwork for how we review greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Montana. And this is something that a lot of Republicans, we didn't even want to admit it, that there was greenhouse gas, but we knew we had to do something because this is what the Supreme Court tasked us with. And so we come up with the best version possible, and still didn't matter. This held group decided this wasn't good enough, and so they went directly to the Supreme Court, completely bypassed district courts, any lower court, and petitioned the Supreme Court to hear this case again. They haven't heard it yet, so we still have hope, and hopefully the Supreme Court's like, no, the legislature did its job, and we're not going to meddle in the legislature's business. But I have little faith in that with the makeup of the Supreme Court, even though we do have Corey Swanson, Justice Swanson in there, Chief Justice Swanson in there. He's outnumbered severely, so it's an uphill battle, but it's something that, I mean, if we can't get this figured out, Montana will not be open for business. It will severely affect our economy, everything from agriculture to energy production to, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're building a new Walmart or expanding a parking lot on Walmart. You have to do, they want you to do one of these studies. It will completely grind our economy to a halt. And Montana will no longer be the treasure state because we will not have the ability to go after any of our natural resources.
Well, and look, we have already lost a huge chunk of our industrial base. You've seen it in Sydney, you know, with coal and with sugar beet mm-hmm. factories and Western Montana. And this is another big picture thing here is, look, you have far left judges at the federal level like Don Malloy destroy the timber industry and mining yeah. opportunities in Western Montana. I think now the left is seeing the writing on the wall. President Trump had 16 Supreme Court victories, major Supreme Court victories this year. We've got finally a new federal judge in Bill Mercer in Missoula. Trump's got another appointee for the Billings federal judgeship coming up after the first of the year. I think we'll start hearing more action on. And so they're saying, oh, we can't use our buddies on the federal courts as much as we used to, or we won't be able to much longer. So now we got to use our buddies that we've installed in the state courts to push our agenda and to grind Montana to a halt. And that's exactly what they're doing. And things like the held case, et cetera, are the way they can undermine everything, agriculture, mining, or a bridge from one place to another.
Yeah. No, and it's absolutely insane what they're trying to do, and it's completely, I mean, for one, the Supreme Court tasked us with fixing it, and then two, I mean, there again, we made a policy decision, and they haven't made the ruling yet, I don't want to get the cart ahead of the horse here. But still, I mean, this case shouldn't be, they shouldn't even have allowed it because they were like, they should have been like, we tasked the legislature with fixing this. They fixed it. This is what, this is now the standard. And none of us in the legislature just want to go chop down every tree, pollute every river or anything like that. You know, we want to make sure we're doing our due diligence to leave what we have for our kids and for our grandkids and, everything like that. But we also know there has to be a happy medium between that and allowing industry to thrive in the state of Montana. You want to see property taxes, especially residential property taxes, just skyrocket. Make it to where you can't have an industry in the state of Montana. Make it to where you can't have, any agriculture in the state of Montana. Then everything will be on the back of the homeowners. It all trickles down.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like the more we lose our industrial base, the more every taxpayer-funded entity relies on what? Property taxes. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to talk with the one and only Art Laffer. The Art Laffer is going to be with us on this show tomorrow. We're going to be talking about property taxes because he's working on doing away with these crazy property tax systems. And he's taking the lead in places like Florida right now. So I want to get his take on what we can do here in Montana. Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, I got a message on the Montana Talks app here from Maria in Bozeman. And she says this: I'm very excited about the idea that we might be looking into how our elected judges are applying the law. It seems that more than ever, the law in Montana has become about doing favors for friends, not about the law. which is beautiful. And I think she's referring to this new Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission. We actually caught up with the chairman of that commission, Keith Regeer, last week on the show.
Absolutely, and was really excited. I put former Representative Alan Doan was my appointee on that commission, and I think that commission is going to do really good work and really, shine a light on in some areas that hadn't seen light before. And honestly, just work that, I was at a meeting last night and a lot of people are saying, I work, 40, 50, 60 hours a week and my wife works, 40 hours a week. When do we have time anymore to, keep up with, stuff going on? And, this commission right here is exactly, what we need because, people, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, which you and I live in this world. And so it's our job. It's what we do. We keep track of this stuff. And, but the normal everyday Montanan, I mean, it's work to keep up with all this. It's work to do all the research. And this commission right here is going to do that work for the state of Montana. And I believe it's going to have really good outcome on shining a light in areas that, we previously haven't been able to shine a light on. So I'm really excited about the work that they'll have upcoming. And, hopefully it makes a positive impact when it comes time to, look at, different judges' rulings and how the outcomes have been made up and, everyday decisions that they make and people are going to know. And so I'm very excited about that.
Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, we've only got about a minute or so to go here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, when it comes to these judicial accountability, judicial reform measures that did not get across the finish line, there were some Republicans who helped the Democrats block these measures. How involved are you going to be in these Republican primaries to make sure that you get pro-judicial reform and accountability lawmakers in the next session?
In leadership, I'm going to stay out of primaries. I'm going to let the voters decide. If somebody comes up and asks me, did this person vote for judicial reform or did this person vote for that? I'm definitely going to tell them the truth, but I am not going to get involved in primaries. I think that's the citizens or the constituents of that district's job. That's their vote. And, so I'm not really going to get too terrible involved in primaries, but, I do want, to make sure that we next session or, anytime we can actually do it, get involved, and push this forward. And we're already working with, groups of legislators and trying to figure out, what actually can we do, because we need to do something about the transparency in the judicial branch.
All right. Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, Merry Christmas to you and yours. Thanks for being with us. Look forward to catching up in the new year.
Thanks. Merry Christmas to you too, Aaron.
All right. Thank you very much. He mentioned Judge Dan Wilson. He's with us right after this. Stand by.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Leaders of the House Agriculture Committee say Congress may need to step in with at least $10 billion in additional aid for U.S. farmers beyond the $12 billion Farmer Bridge Assistance Program recently announced by the Trump administration. House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson of Pennsylvania said the administration's program, while helpful, does not go far enough to support all sectors of agriculture. The current package is largely aimed at row crops such as corn, soybeans, and wheat, with about $1 billion set aside for other commodities. Thompson said industries including dairy, timber, and specialty crops like potatoes may require further assistance to help producers secure credit and remain viable into 2026. He emphasized that any supplemental aid should stabilize farms without replacing market forces. Meanwhile, USDA Undersecretary Richard Fordyce said budget constraints make a second aid package from the agency unlikely, leaving Congress as the primary option for more support. Senate Agriculture Committee leaders said they are waiting to see how far the current funds go before committing to a specific amount of additional aid. As for the $12 billion set aside for the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, the enrollment is currently underway for those commodity crops that are qualifying for it. For more information on it, contact your local Farm Service Agency office.
I'm Lane Northland.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby, a holiday engagement for GOP Louisiana Representative Julia Letlow during the congressional ball at the White House, no less. Letlow is now engaged to Kevin Ainsworth. He is an attorney and lobbyist from Baton Rouge. The proposal was private, but President Trump later recognized the couple and brought them up on stage, even asking to see the ring. That's a big deal that transcends politics, the president said. Letlow was previously married to late House aide and GOP Congressman-elect Luke Letlow. He contracted COVID and died 3 weeks after the election, never taking office in 2020. Congresswoman Letlow said she didn't intend to run for the seat, but ran and won in a special election. Voters have reelected her twice since then. The engagement announcement comes at a time of widespread speculation about Letlow's political future. She could run for the House, but there's also chatter that she may challenge GOP Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy. But it's only believed she would do so if President Trump endorses her. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's sneak on a quick caller here. I was going to try to get to her while we had Speaker Lear on the show, but I had to sneak in that one more question for sure, because that was a big question I know some of our listeners had for Speaker Lear when it comes to judicial reform. And then we've got Judge Dan Wilson joining us in studio here. He is a candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. Francis in Big Fork, what's on your mind? Thanks for the call.
Well, I just read in the paper that Sheehy introduced this bill to put veterans and retired police in schools to protect their kids. And have you heard anything much about it?
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
It's a really good idea. So, and the idea actually started with Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter. So, you know, he's already got, he's got people in the schools with an immediate notification system in place as well. And this is expanding on the program that he's got in place. Basically, what they're going to do is, hey, if you're a retired military or first responder and you're getting, say, a pension, they're going to make your pension tax deductible if you serve in the schools supporting school security. It just sounds like a win-win all around.
It sounds like a great idea to me because these kids are so, you know, they have no protection whatsoever. Somebody can come in and shoot them up. Well, time the police get there, even if they call right away, how many are going to be dead?
That's right. That's right. In fact, I didn't even think, if I was thinking, you know, we do some of these best of shows at the end of the year, like on New Year's Day, or maybe we can include it. But, my conversation with Cascade County Sheriff Slaughter, yeah, we actually talked about this very legislation that is now being introduced by both Senator Tim Sheehy and Congressman Ryan Zinke carrying it in the House. Great legislation. Francis, great to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Let's turn now to Judge Dan Wilson, candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. Judge, great to see you.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Aaron. Thanks so much for inviting me.
You told me you just got some turkey hunting in here recently. That's some of my favorite hunting.
Over the weekend, I was out. I didn't get one, but the season doesn't end till the end of the year.
Yeah. Bird hunting's a ton of fun, and then you don't have to break your back hauling things out either.
Well, that's just it, isn't it?
Well, first off, before we talk about a number of different topics, you were listening in as Speaker of the House Brandon Lear was with us on the show, talking about our courts, talking about the Supreme Court, judicial reform, judicial accountability. What stood out to you?
Well, it was an interesting conversation to listen to because it's right up the alley of what I've been studying and also talking about while I've been on the campaign trail. As Chief Justice Corey Swanson has pointed out in a number of his opinions, the problem right now at the Supreme Court is not partisanship, it's activism. It's judges who don't find the answer in either the constitutional language or in the history of its debate and adoption, that fill in the blanks, fill in the cracks, so to speak, with their own agenda. And this is wrong, in my view. Judges have that power, of course, if we elect them to do that. But I don't think we should. I think that whenever the Constitution and its history is silent on an issue, that means it's a power, it's a decision, it's an issue that's reserved to the people. and to the people's representatives. And the Supreme Court needs to back off and just wait for the people to decide those issues.
It's, you know, I think if you just went out on the street and asked random folks, do you think we should have nonpartisan judges and justices? Everybody would say, yeah. What they mean is we should have judges that are ruling based on the law and based on the Constitution and not based on whether they're a Republican or a Democrat. But that is not what we have right now in our supposedly nonpartisan system. We have all too often, at least in my opinion, and in the Speaker's opinion there, we have judges that are ruling on behalf of their buddies that are Democrat Party mega donors or the radical environmental groups, or they're taking the Democrat Party's line. That's not what these judges and justices should be doing.
Well, you put your finger right on it, Aaron, and that's the issue. And the thing is, you don't know. You don't know who an activist judge is ruling on behalf of. And you'll never know that when the campaigns are on, because they're not going to say. So what we need, I think, are just like you suggest, we need judicial candidates who make a commitment to the rule of law, which is rule of something other than their own preferences and their own agendas.
But regardless, no matter what is allowed in our elections in terms of partisanship, affiliation, candidates being allowed to do that or not, look, you still got to make your case to the people. And I think Montana's... You know, you could argue that, yeah, if there was an R or a D behind a judicial candidate's name, people might be more likely to vote one way or the other. But you still got to have good candidates that get out there and have a good message that people can trust, that people will vote for.
Well, and that's true. And that's the other side of the partisan judicial election debate. Just because a judge or a legislator or a governor or any other candidate puts an R or D behind their name, it doesn't really mean anything in the judicial world because it's not enforceable. You know, I've heard the argument is, well, we can't have partisan judicial races because if we have partisan judges, they'll be beholden to the party. And I ask these people, how? How are you beholden? You know, if I win the Supreme Court election next year, I have an 8-year term. I'm not going to be taking a call from anybody on a Democrat or Republican side who wants to say, this is how you're going to rule. My answer is going to be the same no matter what. So I'm going to rule according to the law. So I'm not sure that even the answer that some folks want for partisan judicial elections is going to solve what I think is really the problem, and that is activist judges.
Speaking of judges and judicial accountability, I think you saw this judge. Was it in Wisconsin? She had an illegal alien convicted of additional crimes in her courtroom, and ICE was going to grab him after the proceedings were done. She whisked him out the back door. She deliberately tried to keep ICE from detaining this guy.
Yeah, and I wasn't surprised at all by the conviction. In fact, I was in Missoula giving a talk at the Rotary Club months ago, and this question was asked me, what about this Wisconsin judge? And I said, look, judges have immunity for the rulings and their conduct under their own state laws if they're a state judge. So as a Montana state court judge, when I make a decision, I am immune. And if people don't like it, they can appeal, which is, in a sense, a lawsuit against the judge's ruling. But it's not against a lawsuit against the judge himself or herself. In Wisconsin, the judge does not have any authority under federal law, none whatsoever. She can't rule on federal law on anything. And so when she decides that she's going to obstruct a federal peace officer in the performance of his or her duty, there's no immunity for that. It'd be like a Montana judge going to Idaho, getting drunk and driving and hitting someone and getting arrested and saying, you can't arrest me, you can't charge me, I'm a judge, I'm immune. It's silly. And it's frankly, it was a stupid argument, but it was a political argument that gained lots of traction, lots of judges, lots of lawyers who I think knew better, took her side, and now they're all quiet. Now that a jury has convicted her, and thankfully, that conviction, according to what I've read, really was the result of one of her colleagues that she coerced to put on her robe and go out and confront these officers with her. This judge testified against her, said she was mortified. Wow. I was mortified. Wow. That I was being put in a position to obstruct federal officers, because this judge knew what a judge's duties were. So I think it's an unfortunate chapter, and I think it's a stain on the judiciary that she claimed that she had immunity, and it's also a stain on the profession of law that so many lawyers and judges took her side.
It's interesting that you were asked this question at Rotary Club in Missoula, because I can also imagine, you know, people are asking the question is like, okay, how do we hold these judges accountable? You have judges putting criminals back out on the streets. And, like, for example, we saw, you know, the young woman who was slaughtered on that train and that public transit in North Carolina, a career criminal, continued to be put back out on the streets. So there's some people who say, we need to hold that judge accountable for putting those murderers back out on the streets. That's where it gets a little trickier because of the judicial ruling. Accountability in that case comes down to elections and throwing the bums out.
There's that, but also in states where they've wanted to have fewer people held in jail pending trial, the legislatures there have enacted rules that limit what the judges can consider in deciding whether to detain someone before a trial. And so oftentimes these bail reforms don't come from the judges themselves, but come from the legislatures, unfortunately.
What we're also seeing in these left-wing cities, a form of jury nullification taking place now, where you had a pro-illegal alien truck, a tow truck operator in, I think, L.A., towed an ICE vehicle away to block them from doing their jobs. But, of course, the left-wing jury down there let him off the hook about 30 seconds before the break.
Yeah, and there's nothing really that you can do about that. Juries are going to make up their minds, and in an important sense, they reflect their community's values, but those shift over time as well.
That's all right. Quick break here on Montana Talks. Lots to chat about here with Judge Dan Wilson, candidate for Montana Supreme Court. This is going to be one of the most important races taking place here in Montana next year. Nearly got across the finish line the last election, so now's your chance in the year ahead.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, if you've got a quick question or comment here as we catch up with Judge Dan Wilson, you can give us a ring, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app. Let's see. Into the phone lines we go. We've got Scott in Billings on the phone lines. Scott, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. I'm really frustrated about judicial activism as well, and I'm just wondering if we can't attach partisan labels to the candidates, is there anything preventing them from being clear in their messaging, their campaign messaging, like I stand for original Montana values or something like that?
How do you communicate to, you know, Republican voters, which are very clearly the majority in Montana right now, that you are the candidate who is not one of these left-wing wackos, that you kind of share their values essentially, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, great question. All right, let's throw that to Judge Dan Wilson.
It's a great question, Scott, and I'm so glad that you called in to ask it, because the messaging has to be clear. And that's what I am trying to do in my campaign, is to be as clear as I can about where I stand on how we interpret the Constitution and how we apply it. And I am a constitutional originalist, which means that the Constitution itself has to answer the question, or we look to the debate and the votes of the delegates during that convention. And if they don't answer it, then the power doesn't belong to the courts. It's not power that belongs to the judges. It's the power that belongs to the people. And if questions come up about questions that aren't answered in the Constitution, then it's up to the people through their elected legislature or through the amendment process, amending the Constitution, to say what it means. But it's not property of the judges.
We're getting real short on time here as we catch up with Judge Dan Wilson. Another topic I wanted to get to, earlier this hour, we were talking with Speaker of the House Brandon Lehr about, you know, this liberal judge in Missoula who's trying to push the transgender agenda. We're very clearly seeing this now, where they can't get this transgender agenda across the finish line in the legislature or through Congress because the American people are rejecting it. So instead, they're trying to do it through the courts. What's your take on this, and how you stop this basically this type of judicial activism.
That takes self-restraint. It takes restraint on the part of the judges, and this is part and parcel to my message. When the Constitution was being debated and when it was being drafted, there was a question whether we should have equal protection rights on the basis of sex so that you could not legally discriminate against people on the basis of their sex. What was not debated, what was not discussed, and if you read the debates, was not even contemplated, was that gender identification was somehow different than sex or was the same as sex. So saying that it's illegal as a matter of constitutional law to discriminate on the basis of gender identification was not something that was discussed, debated, or adopted in 1972. So the answer is, for a judge like myself, an originalist, the Constitution doesn't answer that question. So if a judge is saying that the Constitution does have an answer, in my view, that judge is engaging in judicial activism, is taking authority, a power upon himself or herself that the law and the Constitution does not grant that judge.
Well, and in fact, we were also talking about environmental extremism and judicial overreach on that front within some of these judicial decisions here in Montana. And that's a great example of where your likely opponent next year in the Montana Supreme Court race, liberal Amy Eddy, who's donated to these extreme environmental groups, she donated to Hillary Clinton, she has taken an even further to the left viewpoint on these climate alarmist decisions than even the liberal courts in Montana have taken.
Well, she was among the group of lawyers who filed the first case originally in the Supreme Court that was started the ball rolling toward the Held decision. The Held decision created a new constitutional right to a stable climate system. That was not discussed. It was not agreed on. It was not voted on by the voters, but now we have it. But even more than that, when they were debating this right to a clean and healthful environment, it was very clear by all of the votes taken that the delegates did not want private citizens to have the right to sue to enforce this right to a clean and healthful environment. Instead, they delegated exclusively to the legislature. And the question came up to one of the proponents of that position, well, what do we do if the Supreme Court or the legislature doesn't adopt strict enough laws to protect this right to a clean and healthful environment? And the delegate who was in charge of this effort, C.B. McNeil, who was a judge in Polson afterwards for decades, said, then vote him out. Vote someone else in the legislature. If it's important to you to have laws that strictly enforce this right to a clean and healthful environment, then you are going to do it, if at all, by electing people to the legislature who follow your views.
Well, Judge Dan Wilson, it's been great to catch up with you. Merry Christmas to you and yours. This is going to be a big race, one of the most important elections in the year ahead here in Montana. If our little beagle here could cast a vote, you've got her vote. She is hanging on your every word here. You've got the full support of our little beagle here in the house. So good to see you.
Thanks so much, Aaron.
All right. And, hey, if people want to find out more about your campaign or get involved with your campaign, what's the best way for them to reach out to you with about 20 seconds?
Find me online, WilsonForJustice.com. All one word, no underscores, no periods. WilsonForJustice.com.
All right. What about property taxes in Montana? You got to tune in to tomorrow's conversation. The one and only Art Laffer. Are you familiar with the Laffer curve? Art Laffer himself is going to join us on the show, and we're going to talk about what he's doing to do away with property taxes in other states.